tight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocritics. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
On today's show, you'll hear the second and final part of the speech given by Professor Peter Phillips discussing his new book, which will be released in August of 2018. It's called Giants, The Global Power Elite. It sounds like one that everyone should read. It documents who rules the world, who are these global elite, and how do they control just about everything? And he names names, so it's all right there. The research is done. All you have to do is get a copy and check it out. And to get a copy of this great new book, you can go to the website projectcensored.org. And again, that's projectcensored.org. For those who don't know, Peter Phillips is a former Project Censored director. He's a media monitoring sociologist and professor at Sonoma State University. The speech you're about to hear was given in March of 2018 at a conference as part of the Sonoma State University's fourth annual Social Justice Week, and it was partially sponsored by Project Censored. This video was recorded by Dennis Murphy of Petaluma Community Access and was lightly edited by me due to time constraints. So here he is, Peter Phillips, with the second and final part of that speech.
The post-9/11 wars continue to wreak havoc and death in the Middle East, Africa, and other regions. Over 180,000 people died in 46 conflicts in 2014. 65 million people are displaced refugees from 2017, fleeing war and famine. And these wars are not just the results of military adventurism or political conflicts, but are motivated by propagandized ideological fears of terrorism, the desire for profit and military investment. Lockheed Martin takes the lead with profit-making in war, with $36 billion spent in 2015. The perpetual war on terrorism is good for business, and the transnational capital investment people invest in these companies. So in the book I researched, and I found out that Lockheed Martin, if you look at the 17 giants, State Street has $15 billion invested in Lockheed Martin. Capital Group has $12 billion. Vanguard, $6.5 billion. BlackRock, $6 billion. Bank of America, $3 billion. Bank of New York Mellon, almost $1 billion. UBS, $900 million. FMR, Fidelity, $700 million. Morgan Stanley, $700 million. All of them are invested in Lockheed Martin. All of them are invested in Northrop Grumman, with State Street taking the lead at $5.9 billion. All of them are invested in Boeing, with Vanguard taking the lead at $11.9 billion. So these companies, these big war-making companies that make profit from war, are highly invested by the centralized capital giants. That's where it is. They also invest in Coca-Cola, by the way. And, of course, Coke is the number one cause of diabetes and sugar consumption in the world. And they put out 1.4 billion plastic bottles a year, of which just a few percent of them are ever recycled. And they continue to do that. So the giants have no conscience in terms of where the money's invested. It's just wherever it can be the best returns. So if we think about part of this, is that the ultimate crisis of humanity, short of a global nuclear war, is also environmental degradation. Scholar David Ray Griffin asks in his book Unprecedented, can civilization survive the CO2 crisis? Since pre-industrial times, the temperature has risen 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit, causing significant changes in our world's weather. Just 100 companies have been the source of 70% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions since 1988. So the people causing this are a very small number, 100 companies. There's a 30-year lag between, it's a 10-year lag between CO2 emissions and temperature changes. So what we're putting out now, we'll see the impacts 10 years from now. The rising temperatures mean a continuing worsening of weather events, extreme storms, record-breaking heats, colds, fires, tidal surges, heavy death rates, and financial losses. We will see massive fresh water and food shortages. All of this will be in our future if left unchecked. Global capital is a primary contributor to those problems, and they invest in all the things that are making it happen. Actually, the financial money managers study the transforming environment for new investment opportunities. Climate change investing can be profitable, according to Forbes Investing, and getting in on low-carbon investments, and should climate change stress increase, investments in defense, health, property insurances are all good ideas, Forbes thinks. Increasing interest in new mining opportunities available due to global warming in Greenland and places where the ice is melting back. And private investment in the control of water sources is seen as an increasingly attractive opportunity for capital investment. The most important issue for the transnational capitalist class is protecting capital investment and building opportunities for future returns. If protecting the environment is profitable, then reinvestments are acceptable. What remains unacceptable is the spending of money on people, the environment, and services that do not benefit capitalism. This lack of concern for human betterment, intended or not, is the core contradiction of the transnational capitalist class and the true crisis of capitalism today. Our research focuses on transnational policy groups that are non-governmental. These organizations unite the transnational elites as a class. The G30 and the Trilateral Commission are privately funded, staff-supported research organizations, whereby TCC elites can speak openly on global capital and security issues, moving towards a consensus of understanding on needed policies and their implementations. These meetings offer the transnational elites opportunities to personally interact with each other in face-to-face, off-the-record settings that allow for personal intimacies, trust, and friendships to emerge. These interactions are the foundation of the transnational elite class consciousness and social awareness of their common interests. We think that the Group of 30, the G30 it's called, is a private nonprofit group based in Washington, and the Trilateral Commission, the two together having 86 elite members in their management teams, are essentially the central core of policy planning process for the world. Both are nonprofit corporations supported independently from government funding and any regulations that for them, they open up the discussion of global capital and security needs by people with common class and financial interests. 12 of our $17 trillion investment firms have one or more representatives on either the G30 or the Trilateral Commission or both. Goldman Sachs has four directors on the core of the transnational policy group. The most important part of private policy planning organizations is that there's no government control or oversight. These are elites meeting together privately, often off the record. They will issue reports that are read very closely by the World Bank and NATO and others, but the G30 is one in particular. They describe themselves as they aim to deepen the understanding of international and economic financial issues and to explore the international repercussions of decisions taken in the public and private sectors. The G30 is a highly influential institution in the area of global finance. G30 was founded in 1978. Reports from study groups made up by the top bankers, financiers, policymakers, and academics. These reports are widely accepted and usually implemented around the globe. The G30 is a nonprofit corporation funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and now receives close to $1 million a year in donated funds from various private sources. A G30 report in October 2016 on oil and global economy reports how the U.S. fracking technology has changed the industry, making the U.S. a global exporter of oil, resulting in lower prices and destabilization of the Middle East and North African countries, called those MENA countries. Middle East and North African countries. The report calls for the MENA countries to build more diversified competitive economies because we're selling oil cheaper and they're not doing so good. And that the report calls for strong leadership because the regions need bold and creative governments will show the way for the youth and new entrepreneurs, encourage private initiative, and change attitudes from idleness and dependency to diligence and self-reliance. They said that right in the report. So in other words, if you're not a bold and creative government, upgrading your idle youth and complying with global capitalism's investment opportunities, you are likely to be replaced through an externally supported regime change. I mean, they just come out and they say this. The 32 of the G30 policy directors are deeply connected in the transnational institutions of central banks. 12 are from the US, one US citizen has dual citizenship with Israel. 3 are French, 2 are from the UK, both from the House of Lords. 2 directors each from Germany and Mexico, including the former president of Mexico. 1 director each from Poland, Canada, Spain, Argentina, Italy, Brazil, Switzerland, Japan, India, Singapore, and China. Highly educated group, 16 of the 32 hold PhDs. 31 of them are men, and there's one woman, Gail Kelly, who's from the Australian Bankers Association. She also worked at the International Monetary Fund. She's the only woman in that group. Very, very powerful group. I mean, when they put out a policy plan, it's perceived by the World Bank as a direction to what to do. So Bank of International Settlement, their members are all linked into IMF, the Bank of International Settlements, the World Bank, the Basel Committee, Financial Stability Board, the G7, G20, WTO, and the Federal Reserve here in the US. These are very powerful people, and they all meet in one place privately, put out reports, and we have zero input into what they're planning and thinking. All 32 members of the G30 have been keynote speakers at the World Economic Forum in Davos. Of the 17 most connected money management firms, there's 6 that are directly on the board of directors of those from the G30. So the G30 brings together 32 of the most powerful people in the world. They are essentially the executive committee of the policy core of global capitalism. They can formally develop policy recommendations outside of government oversight. They organize behind-the-scenes study groups with other TCC elites, and they provide an international understanding of policies needed to protect global capitalism and continued growth. They focus on security, and it's safe to say, the financial executive committee of the transnational capitalist class. One organization, very small. The other one that's far more international is the Trilateral Commission. This was founded in 1973, and it brings together unofficially, without government oversight again, the highest level group possible to address important international problems. Originally, the representatives were from Europe, US, and Japan only. In later years, representatives from around the world. It started in 73 with Rockefeller funding. Currently, there are 375 members from 40 countries, 87 from the US, Germany has 20, France, Italy, UK have 18 each. The Asian group has 100 members, and the remaining 124 from countries all over the world. Each country has a quota and can nominate people as openings become available. Members take formal positions in their government, they're asked to step down. So the formal members, if you're in government, you're not in the Trilateral Commission. Trilateral Commission is business executives, mostly men, but there's a good portion of women there, who are setting policy privately. They issue regular task force reports. The task force report in 2013-14 was entitled Engaging Russia, a Return to Containment. The authors were former US undersecretary, a Polish prime minister, and a former Japanese ambassador. The report was prepared in 2013. Multiple consultations were held in Mexico City, Manila, Krakow, Washington, D.C., and at Harvard. The report expressed concern that the Russian invasion of Crimea, and invasions is in quotes there, because the Russians didn't really invade Crimea, they already had bases there. And that was an agreement with the Ukraine government for a long time. Putin was described as bringing about a ruthless break with the West. Under Putin, Russia was not contributing to global stability, but rather aspires to be a superpower. U.S. business leaders are concerned about the anemic growth and economic climate in Russia. Concerns with Putin and the topic of his removal were clearly uppermost in the minds of the trilateralists. The TCC business elites are salivating over the opportunities Russia's vast economic resources offer for capitalist investment. Now, under Yeltsin, when the wall fell, and under Yeltsin, we did do a good bit of investment in Russia. We still have great investments there. But Putin has reasserted the government's control over the country. And so our capitalists are not as free to invest all over the world, and it requires government approval. So they're literally thinking and trying to put, you know, regime change in Russia as a primary agenda for what we're trying to do. That's why you've seen so much negative press in the U.S. corporate media about Putin and Russia. It's been constant. And the whole, they've interfered with our elections, and we did that to them a long time ago. But, you know, everything they've done, it's almost there daily in our media or on our television news. So that everybody's got this really negative, the Russians are bad, the Putin's bad, and it's been deliberate. The global corporate media are owned and controlled by the transnational capitalist class. Their primary goal is the promotion of products and pro-capitalist propaganda through their psychological control of human desires, emotions, beliefs, fears, and values. That's what media does to us. Corporate media does this by manipulating our feelings and our cognition of human beings worldwide and promoting entertainment viewing as a distraction to global inequality. Corporate media receives two-thirds of their broadcast and print content from public relations and propaganda firms. It's not like all the news people are out there gathering news. They'll go cover the local wreck or what's happening at the jail. But when it comes to international policy issues, it's coming out of public relations firms, meaning that nearly all content for global capital media today is a prepackaged, managed news, opinion, or entertainment. The big three global public relations firms are WPP, Omnicom, and Interpublic Group. I have a whole chapter on this. They get $35 billion a year in revenue, and they have total hegemony, and they promote the total hegemony of capitalism in the world today. There can be no alternatives. Public relations firms and their corporate media partners serve corporations, the government, and non-governmental organizations in an unrelenting ideological assault and the pacification of the minds of the masses of the world. So the people living on $2 a day, they're trying to convince them to smoke cigarettes and drink Coke. I mean, and it's American tobacco. The overall messages are the encouragement of the continued acquisition of material products and consumption, expanded desires for a life of luxury, fear of others, terrorists, criminals, threatening people, the support of police states, the acceptance of permanent war on terrorism, and the equation of private corporations as an essential element of democracy. This is what Noam Chomsky called engineering opinion and parading enemies. And now, an important world policy planning group is the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council is a nonprofit organization established in 1949 as an alliance from people in the countries of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. The stated goal was to build policies and institutions towards collective security and peace against the Russians, ideally. That was what it was about. And they have an annual budget of $20 million, and 74% of their funds come from contributions from private grants and private corporations. The Atlantic Council produces numerous policy reports, books, and papers. The U.S. NATO military security issues are high priority for the Atlantic Council. This is another policy group that has 146 elite members in it that are setting the agendas for military action and security issues worldwide. And countries pay attention and follow them. These 146 elites come from 28 countries on the board of directors. Among the listed directors are four former NATO commanders, 13 representatives from major defense contractors, including Boeing, Raytheon, Bechtel, Lockheed Martin, BAE, SAIC, Carlyle Group, Booz Allen Hamilton. 11 directors are current or former military generals or admirals. 41 directors are active in government or private security, including the National Security Council and various public and private security policy groups, including cybersecurity. And also on this board is G4S. This is the international security company, the second largest employer in the world with 650,000 people, but it's a private security people. Those are the ones with the dogs up in the Dakotas that were attacking the people trying to prevent the pipeline. So private mercenaries and private military companies are increasingly a part of war and manipulations in the world today. Global capital management and the protection of concentrated capital is a top priority for the Atlantic Council. 40 of the individuals on the board of directors were connected with capital investment management firms in some way. They were all very high in various large capital corporations. People on the board of directors, six were in the corporations of our 17 listed in our core group. They are the financial management investment firms from all over the world, and their job is to protect security for global capital. So we have, in the book I break it down, with the managers of Global Capital. That's 199 folks that are on the board of directors of the 17 giants. Then we have the facilitators of capital. Those are the people on the Council of 30 and the Trilateral Commission who facilitate, make policies for capital's free flow and investment with no interference from governments anywhere in the world. And then we have the protectors of capital. That's the Atlantic Council and their use of the military intelligence, NATO, and the U.S. military empire worldwide to protect capital investment and its free flow. And when the U.S. NATO military empire is slow to perform or faces political resistance, that's when private security firms and private mercenary companies are increasingly filling the elite's demand for protection of their assets. These protection services included personal security for executives and their families, protection of safe residence and work zones, tactical military advisory and training of national police and armed services, intelligence gathering on democracy movements and opposition groups, weapons acquisitions and weapon systems management, and strike forces for military action assassination. Private companies are doing that. We are privatizing war, and the capital elites are invested in them. Over $200 billion a year is spent on private security, employing some 15 million people. G4S is the second largest private employer with 625,000 people. They earned $10 billion a year in 2014. G4S works with Chrysler, Apple, Bank of America, and Nigeria. The G4S counterinsurgency operations protect Chevron pipelines. They've undertaken similar operations in the South Sudan, provide surveillance for checkpoints. They help manage prisons in Israel and security for Jewish settlements in Palestine. G4S offers security guards, alarms, management, transportation systems, prison management, and electronic offenders in 120 countries around the world. So the U.S. NATO military empire is the police force for concentrated transnational capitalism with a few hundred individuals and the control tens of trillions of dollars. The core agenda for the global empire is protection of capital growth, the elimination of barriers and restrictions to the free movement of capital. The TCC shares an interest in ensuring capital growth and open opportunities for investment worldwide and is the driving force of capitalism. Global policymaking thereby becomes an important transnational function. The formation of transnational capitalist class made up of persons with shared educational experiences, similar lifestyles, common ideologies, is rapidly becoming an essential component of global capitalism today. Institutions with capitalist countries, including government ministries, defense forces, intelligence agencies, the judiciary, universities, and representative bodies all recognize to varying degrees that the overriding demands of transnational capital reach beyond the boundaries of nation states. The idea of legal boundaries for nation states has long been held sacrosanct in the traditional liberal capitalist economies. However, globalization has placed a new set of demands on capitalism that requires transnational mechanisms to support continued capital growth. Worldwide is increasingly beyond the boundaries of individual states. The financial crisis of 2008 is an acknowledgement of the global system of capital under threat. We see these demands as allowing for the abandonment of nation-state rights altogether by occupations, wars, trade agreements, and enforced economic rules. Failed states, manufactured civil wars, like in Syria, regime changes, direct invasion and occupations are all manifestations of the New World Order requirements for protecting transnational capital. The global power elites understand the need for transnational agreements and international mechanisms in support of capital expansion and growth. They are very rapidly building organizations to support transnational capital and bring together elites from every region of the world. Knowing who exactly they are as core players in the world is an important part of understanding about what needs to be done, which is the book we list 389 of them. And it's not too late for democracy movements to divert this onslaught of concentrated capital growth, but rapid adjustments are needed very soon if we value our human rights and democracy. Was that just too much to take in? It really is quite amazing. Most people don't realize the degree to which capital is so concentrated in the world today and how few people control it. And that concentration is bigger than governments. Governments are paying attention to protecting the capital in a very big way. Yeah, Tim.
Here he was asked about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, known as the TPP.
I think we're still trying to move in that direction, but it's all about keeping capital, the free flow of capital, going and investments happening without trade barriers and that. So I'm still trying to figure out what Trump's doing with the steel industry, other than internal political stuff. But if he does too much of that, he's not going to be around very long. Because it's really Wall Street that's setting those up and making those plans. But what we're seeing, though, too, is in Davos they worry and they talk about the precariat. And the precariat is the working class people who aren't doing as well. And they're the ones that voted for BritEx in England. So they're standing up and revolting. So now we're trying to figure out how do we deal with middle class people voting. And in a way, that explains how Trump got in. Because he was not the choice of Wall Street particularly. He got through, but the best thing he did was get them the tax relief they wanted. So they saved billions and billions of dollars. Now I think they're starting to think rather seriously. And he put together an advisory board of 15 people originally, and they disbanded after some of the stuff he said last summer. So BlackRock board, Chase Manhattan, Jamie Dimon, they're certainly have second thoughts, but their idea is that, well, he's the one flying our airplane right now, so we have to support him. But I think if the airplane flies too far one way or the other and their impacts are happening, we'll see some kind of impeachment actions happen pretty quick.
Here he's responding to a question about the elite and transnational corporations.
Well, the elite are the people managing investment capital. Transnational corporations get a lot of money from those sources. So, you know, like Coca-Cola, I mean, massive amounts of money come from those investment management firms that go into Coca-Cola or American Tobacco or the auto dealerships. I mean, yeah, multinational companies, they need to have money, they need to have people invested, and increasingly, it's not you and me investing in them unless you're in a pension plan that does a little bit of that, and CalPERS invests in all this stuff too, which is my pension plan, but we don't have any say about it. And the impacts, the negative impacts that is happening environmentally and impacts in terms of increased wars and regime changes, it's just incredible. It's an awful manifestation. And the sooner we understand this and we can really relate to this and address it as the 99% and demand our democracy, that would empower us. And I think that social movements scare the hell out of them. I mean, we write a letter at the end of the book. 90 local folks have signed this letter. And we're saying, look, you guys, this isn't working well. The top 20% are getting wealthier, but the 80% aren't. And this will ultimately lead to civil wars, unrest, destruction, environmental riots, that sort of thing, and environmental collapse, and financial collapse with you guys, because you don't have places to invest all this money. So let's figure it out. Let's do something. Let's turn what you call a trickle down into a river of resources that's going downward into the coffers of every human being on this world and pulling them out of poverty and adjusting. It wouldn't take that much. They are the ones in power to do that, short of massive civil wars and revolutions. And that gets pretty terrible. So, but they are capable, and we have to find the ones that support that kind of activity, encourage them, have social movements that really stress the inequality. And it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, social movements are happening around a lot of different things. But ideally, it would be a Occupy-type movement where people are in the streets in massive kinds of ways saying, we want the concentration of wealth stopped, we want billionaires stopped, we want to tax their money, you can be a millionaire, we'll let you stay wealthy, but we want all those resources put into humanitarian purposes for the world. And they could do it with public banks in every city. You could take the top 10% off of all of this growth investment and pretty much fund every family in the world to a level of human survival and humanitarian that meets the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. We're going to have to tax or take it away from them in some capacity or force them to release that so that it goes to all human beings in the world. And this isn't just one country. We're talking global here. Thank you very much.
And that concludes the speech given in March of 2018 by Professor Peter Phillips on his new, soon-to-be-released book called Giants, the Global Power Elite. To get your copy, go to projectcensored.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people, right on.